Hi, I'm Suzanne Harrison, Salt Lake County Councilwoman, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm joined on the right by John Dougal.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I feel like I'm in the hot seat. It's like 90 degrees in the bunker today.
It is hot.
And on the left, we're joined by Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, listeners. A special shout out to Bridger. Thanks for saying hi and listening.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be here.
So happy to have you back. So you haven't been with us in a while. You are on the Salt Lake County Council serving at large. And what tell us a little bit about you professionally and maybe your path into politics.
Yeah. So I was elected to the County Council in 22. In my day job, I'm a mom of three kids and a local physician here in Salt Lake County. And my path to public service really was unexpected, but it came
poor
from,
choices.
Right. But it really came from caring about the community and seeing things that I wanted to see better and different for my kids' future.
Yeah, wonderful. Love that. Love moms in office.
And have you served before Salt Lake County Council?
Prior to serving the Salt Lake County Council, I was in the state legislature for 4 years, got to work with
That's
you.
That's when we met.
John, up there. And it's been a real honor to represent my neighbors in public office.
So. Yeah. That's
I'm
right.
So excited to be here. I want to just jump into national issues. We are less than 2 weeks away from the presidential election.
Thank goodness.
I know.
I mean, the campaign that never ends.
If only we could fast forward quickly, right?
Yes.
But I just want, there's several things that have been in the news nationally about the presidential election. Just wanted to see what's on your minds in terms of
voting and, yeah, presidential politics. Well, let me just start by saying,
Shireen was thinking about McDonald's over the weekend.
I certainly was not, because I don't really appreciate it when politicians I would say one of the most interesting points of feedback on Donald Trump's, I would say, play acting working class by serving fries at a McDonald's, I believe in Pennsylvania. Is that right?
Yes. Swing state.
A swing state. But I found that to be a kabuki theater of the highest form. I feel like this is not a working class person. Donald Trump has never worked in food service in his entire life. I have. I don't know if you all have.
But he's a connoisseur of McDonald's.
But I do think, I noticed Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying that she felt like it was kind of making fun of working class people. And I do think that there was an element of it that just felt pretty insensitive to folks that do stand over fryers all day long. But I also don't think that it really was an experience that helped shape his views on fighting for working class people. So besides Donald Trump's stop off at McDonald's, I guess I would just say that I think in these final weeks, what is interesting to me is how he is deciding to spend his time. It feels like this is a person who has gone further and further off the rails, is having a hard time sticking to the broader messages of the campaign around the economy or around, you know, what I think could be potentially more winning issues. And the rhetoric that he is displaying at his rallies is getting darker and more concerning, particularly the commentary on the enemy within, the way that he's talking about wishing he had more generals like Hitler. And then also going even further, I think, into just deep xenophobia and racism to divide this country, and saying that he's doing that because the economic message isn't getting people's attention at his rallies. So at this point in time, it's difficult for me to continue to give space or listen to what Donald Trump is saying when we have really reasonable and, I think, forward-looking proposals from Kamala Harris on things like expanding home care for elderly folks on Medicare, when we're thinking about investing in housing, building housing, when we're thinking about, I would actually just say, the core of our democracy. Real decisions are on the table here. And I know, John, you're not a fan of Trump, but I guess
I'm not a fan of Kamala either.
I know you're not, but tell me what you're thinking in these final weeks.
Well, so as I'm looking at this, you know, I'm seeing Kamala, where I think she's really getting concerned. I think she was riding some momentum and felt upbeat and positive. The message seems to have turned much more negative and fear-mongering from my perspective. She's throwing out different proposals. I mean, she went and did a slew of interviews, and some of the stuff I'm hearing is, you know, you could only ask certain questions. So all the questions had to be pre-approved before they got asked. So she's never getting put on the hot seat in that sense. You mentioned Medicare at home, home care, Medicare. But that's a big growth. And she's going, well, it'll save money. Right now, it doesn't look like it'll save money. It looks like it will spend even more in a program like Medicare, which is struggling to pay its bills because, you know, it's costing more than the money coming in. And there's vague, gauzy kind of proposals out there to do X, Y, Z, but without really good substance of what that actually means. And I think she's also bringing out the Liz Cheneys of the world onto the stage, trying to search, I think, for these undecided voters, gray area, you know, if you will, the Liz Cheney folks that are Republicans that aren't comfortable with Trump that will back her. I don't think many of those exist. I think the Republicans that don't like Trump they're either going to abstain from voting or they're going to vote for a third party. But I don't see them crossing over the aisle.
Yeah.
Because I look at her policies and go, I can't in good conscience support those either.
So I just want to add, keeping people in their homes longer is certainly a reduced cost on the medical healthcare system. We know that the vast majority of dollars spent in our healthcare system are end of life. And in those last years, that people are often left without other options, and increasing home aid or keeping people in their homes longer actually does have huge financial benefit. And I know about this because of work at the county where we have aging and adult services that really works to try to keep people in their homes with programs like Meals on Wheels, you know, helping people get to medical appointments and whatnot. But Suzanne, from your perspective, where are you at on this election? Are you ready for it to be over? Would you like it to go on for another couple months? What are you feeling?
She just loves this.
We are all
done. Look
at
the excitement in her eyes.
Yeah. We're all done. I do want to just say we have one other program the county to help veterans who want to stay in their home be able to stay longer. It's a great partnership with the Salt Lake VA. But yeah, I think we're all done with this election. One thing that has been on my mind is our current system makes it so that there's only a handful of states and a handful of voters in a handful of states that will decide this election. So, you know, these five swing states are getting all of the attention, all the visits, all of the ad buys and so forth. And I think it just makes it so that not every person's perspective or needs or vote matters quite as much.
Are you seeing any, I don't watch much TV, but are you seeing any ads in Utah for either candidate?
Not at the national level.
I don't watch TV either.
Yeah. So I get the occasional, but I'm just not seeing those kind of ads. But what I'm hearing like in Nevada is they're just getting inundated.
But there is something interesting in terms of fundraising in Utah. There was a report that Vice President Harris actually raised almost double what former President Trump has raised in Utah. So that's interesting.
It's interesting. I also think it's indicative of having communities like Park City that sometimes feel like they're used as an ATM, a little bit of a cash register. But also to say that Utahns generally, I think for as conservative as the state is, are not deeply Trump. They just aren't. That's been my experience across many doors in the state. And folks, I mean, even you, John, are an example of this as a person who who considers themselves deeply conservative, a Republican, but simply cannot abide by the kind of rhetoric or leadership or frankly, the lack of conservatism that we see from somebody like Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I think some of the dehumanizing language, the divisive rhetoric and name calling is especially alienating for a lot of Utah voters.
I think that's right. Yeah. So when we think about voting, I guess I just want to add that we have a couple of things that voters in Utah need to be aware of.
Well, you're going to open up your ballot. And given what you hear in the news, you're going to think there's only two or three different races to vote on.
Not the case.
And my ballot was, you know, extended long and on the backside.
Yes. And I want to just add kind of, we'll get into some of the things that people are going to see in the second segment. But I want to start here by saying that we had some issues with votes being counted in southern Utah because voters mailed in their ballots. They certainly put them in their mailbox in time. But because they went out of state for their stamp, for their postmark date, they were not able to be counted.
I'm going to say I don't think it's because it went out of state, but
okay. But so waiting to the last minute is not a good idea.
No,
so
turn your ballot in.
I will note that Vegas is closer to St. George than Salt Lake.
Sure.
So I don't think it's proximity or out of state. It is just you got to make sure it is postmarked
timing.
On time.
Yes. So get those ballots in if you are planning to vote by mail, which most Utahns do. I highly suggest getting those ballots in the mail as soon as possible. They are in your mailbox. If you don't have it, you can contact your county clerk and receive that. Or you can vote.
Vote.utah.gov. Vote.utah.gov. You can go and track the
track
status
your
of your ballot.
That's right.
Not just has it been mailed, but have they received it And have they counted it?
Yep, that's right. So after you send it in, yes, you can do that as well. If you're in that camp, I am. I already delivered mine. But you can also vote early in person.
Early.
Yes.
On the spot. Boom.
Or on election day. So on November 5th, you can also go in and vote in person if you are concerned about this postmark thing. But I know that that is inconvenient for a lot of people who may live far away from a polling station. So
I
just
got halfway through my ballot. It was so long. I got halfway through.
And then you
just
gave
left
up.
His homework to come back later. So I got another couple of weeks.
So one other piece, and this is something I get questions about all the time, are judges. So you can go to judges.utah.gov and you can see the independent system that reviews judges and provides feedback on their performance. That's judges.utah.gov, and those are different all over the state. So you'll have different people.
You'll have some that are statewide.
Yep.
And then you'll have some for certain regions or certain districts as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's right. And then there are numerous voter guides out there that you can go to. If you're a person who cares about the environment, you can check with environmental groups. If you care about LGBT issues, if you care about reproductive issues, you can check with Planned Parenthood. Lots of different organizations. I'm sure the Taxpayers Association puts out a guide as well.
I was waiting for her to throw out some conservative organization.
So you can go and look to those organizations for support. But I also think this is really a time for us to consider, outside of party lines, who are those people who are really representing you and bringing value to public service in this state. But I think maybe we'll jump into our local issues here in the next segment.
Yeah. And just as a final word on this, those local races really matter and impact your day-to-day lives. So make sure you turn in that ballot early and soon. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with John Dougal and Shireen Gorbani. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And I'm Suzanne Harrison in the Political Center. We're back and we're going to talk about state issues. Let's jump in on the local ballot and gubernatorial race.
So we have a pretty interesting situation. I'm guessing you served in the legislature with Phil Lyman. Yes,
I did.
So Representative Phil Lyman, who ran, tried to beat Spencer Cox and actually did.
He was the
convention nominee,
but lost in the primary. Running as a write-in candidate.
Now is running as a write-in candidate. And basically, I forget the twists and turns, John, but you can help me on this. Went to the Utah Supreme Court. So filed in court saying that he was the rightful candidate. Why?
Yes. So he was arguing he was the rightful candidate because he was the convention nominee. And it was unfair and inappropriate for the state legislature to override, if you will, the caucus convention system with an alternative path to the ballot. He should be the nominee. And so essentially there never should have been a primary and it should have just been him.
Yep. So the Supreme Court, Utah Supreme Court said,
basically
no,
shot down his arguments and didn't really hear the thing. So now he's appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Days before the election. Thoughts on this? What do we think?
Well, I think, let me just walk through. So his argument is going to be, you know, basically freedom of association, that this is a constitutionally protected right and that the state via the legislature has trampled that right and that the U.S. Supreme Court needs to write in, restore that right, and therefore dump Cox off the ballot and basically make Lyman the Republican nominee. Mm. Odds that that's going to happen? Ain't going to happen.
Low.
Well, and from my perspective, this is yet another instance of Republican candidates, after having their day in court, not liking the outcome and trying to appeal, or sometimes even deny the outcomes of results.
Or change the rules, right?
But you look at the number of issues before the U.S. Supreme Court, and it says somehow in the next 2 weeks they're going to write in and decide. And if you wait and say post-election, I don't see that they're going to come in and take somebody off, you know, who won the election to say, oh, no, we're going to nullify the results of the election. That's not going to happen.
Pretty wild. Pretty wild. Well, we also have some interesting other things that are statewide. So gubernatorial, but we also have the amendments. We've talked about how A and D have been kicked off the ballot.
So they're on the ballot, but they're not going to be counted.
So you do not have to fill them in. You can fill them in, but no vote counts will be tallied on A or B. But we haven't really spent too much time talking about B or C.
And let me remind folks.
Yeah.
They basically got booted because the legislature missed a constitutional requirement to publish this 60 days in advance in a newspaper, basically of general circulation in all the counties.
Yes.
So you may ask why B and C are still on there.
No one challenged.
Nobody has challenged them. And You have to challenge them for the court to then remove them.
Yeah. So we've got B, which is about, I feel like, John, you're a little tapped into this more than I am, but basically increasing the cap on, go ahead.
So at statehood, all these little pieces of land were set aside for essentially schools.
Yeah.
And so we make money off those public lands, state-owned, controlled lands, and that money gets invested, and that return, part of that return, goes back to the schools. And so this will say, right now, the cap is at 4%, so they can't get more than 4% in a given year. The constitutional amendment would raise it to 5%.
Yeah.
And I think last year, essentially, if the cap would have been in place at 5%, the schools would have gotten something like 4.25% of the earnings off of that fund.
Yeah.
And that would have been about $13 million that last year.
Additional dollars.
This Amendment B is something that means more money for Utah schools at no expense to taxpayers, and parents will be able to help direct that local funding in their school.
Yeah, and this is pretty broadly supported. There's not really an organized opposition to this, though maybe John has one.
even the Utah PTA endorses this.
Yes.
Of course they endorse it, but let me just flag. Part of the issue here that's a concern is, okay, this means more money today, but less money in the future.
It doesn't necessarily mean that.
Well, if you spend it today, it's not in there to invest long term. And so you're taking it today rather than potentially being able to spend it in the future. And one of the things that's just odd as I look at this is there's a state, you know, land trust advocacy office, and they're out there. I don't know if you've seen some Facebook ads. This is really odd from my perspective because governmental entities generally can't advertise for or against a proposition. They can, you know, give neutral statements. They can make a brief statement in support or opposition, but they can't use resources to promulgate that. So for me, looking at this, I'm just scratching my head going, can they really do that? Yeah. Is that really appropriate? And part of the argument they'll use is, well, statute says that they can advocate on legislative issues, you know,
yeah,
for the beneficiaries. And I kind of look and go, well, that's all the beneficiaries, and you're really advocating for the current ones at the expense of those in the future that don't yet potentially exist.
Okay. And a so lot this of potentials is, this in your is, argument there, John.
Well, no, but when you're looking at a trust fund,
yes,
and you have to make a decision, that's where it's a little odd from my perspective to say we got a governmental entity out there spending money to advocate in favor of a constitutional amendment just is really odd.
Yeah, so I would just say this is a nominal change from 4% to 5%, and it does mean additional dollars coming back in. And the way investment funds work, over time, that is not necessarily saying that there will be less funding over time. It'll just be that continued cap. The funds are going to continue to be invested, and there will continue to be dollars there, though there may be some potential impact.
I'm just saying, when you spend it today, sure, it's not there to invest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough. Although part of the reason for putting it on the ballot this year was that there was an assessment that the future generations would perhaps benefit more than the current generations by not making this change. So that was part of the rationale.
Yes.
Let's go to C,
okay,
which is a constitutional change to elect our sheriffs into perpetuity. So, what's your take on this, John?
So this is one of those things where our sheriffs have been elected, as I understand, they've been elected since statehood.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure what's broken and why we need to run this.
Yes. So sheriffs are already elected at the local level. Some of the counties, or are they all up at the same time? Ours isn't up in Salt Lake County right now, so I don't know if the others are or not. But counties elect their sheriffs. They do it on a 4-year term. This is happening without real issues. So I find this unnecessary, but I'm kind of curious if others have a different opinion.
There hasn't been any formal opposition to this, so. Mm.
But I'm not sure what was broken that caused folks to say, we need to do this.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one.
And I will note that there have been some sheriffs in the past who have felt like they're quote-unquote constitutional sheriffs, even though they weren't in the Constitution, and therefore they shouldn't be subject to their county councils or county commissions at the time.
Yeah.
And so as an auditor, you know, I have to remind them, no, you are subject to somebody else setting the budget. I, as the auditor, I'm actually a constitutional officer, and the legislature still sets my budget.
Yeah.
This is how divided government works.
We have Utah listeners all across the state, so we've been a little Salt Lake County focused, not really, mostly statewide, but I'm wondering if you can jump in with Utah County. There are some interesting issues there.
Well, yeah, in North Utah County, we've got the Alpine School District, and there's been for 20 years, we've been talking about when do we split it, and Alpine is the largest school district in the state. And so there are two propositions, Proposition 11 and Proposition 14. So if you're in Northeast Utah County, you're going to vote on Proposition 11. If you're on the west side, it's Proposition 14. And this is really the question, should we split off and create separate districts? Mm-hmm. And only one of those needs to pass that will force the Alpine School District to start splitting. And part of the concern is that government gets too big, doesn't meet the needs of its constituents, in this case, school kids and their parents. And so therefore, should we divide?
Yeah.
And the issues on the West is growth. They need more buildings to address the rapidly growing needs. In the South, the Orem, Linden area, Pleasant Grove, is really the issues of how do we deal with a shrinking population?
Yeah.
And closing buildings and so forth. My side, the what they call Central, which is Alpine Highlands, Cedar Hills, Lehigh, and American Fork, and a little bit, a little bit of Draper, is really looking at how do we customize education for those kids.
Yeah. So, and back to Salt Lake County, maybe. Do we want to talk about the bonds that are on the ballot up here?
Yeah, there's going to be two bonds on the ballot for Salt Lake County residents. One is to continue investing in ZAP, which invests in local arts, parks, trails.
Zoos. Yep. That's the Z.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is going to be up for reauthorization. The other bond is the public safety bond in Salt Lake County that is going to ask voters to vote on whether we should invest in making sure we're addressing jail recidivism, expanding the jail, increasing mental health services throughout that criminal justice system in our jail, and Justice and Accountability Center to help repeat low-level offenders have a place to be stabilized and hopefully get on a path to self-sufficiency.
Yeah, this one's difficult for me, I'll say, because I do support, first of all, I think we need to make sure that we have the correct investments in our jail infrastructure. I would like to see us, you know, moving in more progressive ways away from, for example, criminalizing homelessness. But we know that our criminal justice system needs investment. But if I'm not mistaken, when I was on the county council, about 80 cents on every dollar went into criminal justice, like kind of broadly. It was the biggest part of the county budget, was all of the pieces of that. So from criminal justice to the courts to the district, like all of the pieces. So it's a huge operation, but it's also a huge commitment of our funding already. I think it's really important that we're asking our leaders to make sure that we are looking for ways to decriminalize homelessness and invest in housing. And I don't see housing as a big part of this, but I do see the stabilization and trying to move people into a different system as a benefit. So it's tough because this is one where I'm sort of irritated, but I'm supportive, right? Like there's this push and pull where I want to see greater investments in long-term solutions around homelessness and really increasing housing as a key component of that. But we also know that some folks need a lot of support, and that support can come in addiction services. It can come in mental health counseling. And there are pieces of that in this bond. So I don't know. I guess I would, if you want to weigh in on it, I would just say people need to take a look at all of the things, but also please join me in supporting ZAP, which I'm such a huge fan of.
So, and just to clarify, this bond addresses one portion of Mayor Wilson's 5-year plan to address criminal justice reform and housing. This only interfaces with a small portion of that plan. And we put $25 million into housing last year. That commitment continues in Mayor Wilson's budget proposal that she made this week.
Yeah.
And so this is one small aspect that aligns with other work being done at state and city levels to help address, you know, jail recidivism and making sure that we're getting people the care and help that they need to get on a healthier path.
A different path.
Let me just fly for folks. Passing the ZAP reauthorizing really means, okay, keep your taxes where they're at versus a tax cut as a result of letting it lapse. So it's not just a funding these programs, but it's a revenue source. And it's really a discussion about the level of taxation in Salt Lake County.
Yeah. And it is, I think, something that I don't have the numbers on this in my head anymore. But when we think about the way that people enjoy the way that Salt Lake County invests in our arts, parks and zoos, it is a statewide benefit. We have folks that are coming all over the state to take advantage of that.
Well, this is one of the reasons I live in Utah County is I don't want to pay the higher taxes in Salt Lake County.
Okay, but then don't come to our theaters, John.
Yes, ma'am.
So, okay, John, we understand where you stand, but Suzanne, we're so lucky to have you as a county council representative, and we know that Mayor Wilson just presented in Salt Lake County her budget proposal for this next year. Can you give us just a couple of things that you're really excited about in that proposal?
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be a tight budget year like it is across the state and in cities. For sure. But two of the things I'm most excited about is we're continuing the My County Rec Pass and expanding it to allow any kid under the age of 18 to have free access to rec centers, ice sheets, outdoor or indoor pools. And this is an important way that Mayor Wilson and the council have supported helping people with cost of living stress, making sure people are connecting in person, putting those phones down, especially our kids, helping with mental and physical health. And these things are so important to quality of life here in Salt Lake County. The other thing I'm excited about is elimination of fees for kids' materials in our libraries.
And I know you were a huge advocate for that and made that move forward. So thank you for your work on that. And I'll just say, as a person who regularly participates in Zumba and aqua aerobics, I'm thrilled to see more people in our rec centers.
It's a great thing. And again, this is an example of how residents can have an impact in their local government. So make sure you turn in that ballot and vote and have your voice heard.
Yeah, that's right.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm County Councilwoman Suzanne Harrison, and I've been joined by John Dougal on the right and Shireen Gorbani on the left. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma, and thanks for listening.